The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
There is one great thing about the Alabama special election that most people are not talking about. But first, over the weekend, media frantic about Roy Moore's absence on the campaign trail. Instead of making one last push to win over voters, Moore was found at the Army-Navy football game watching his son play. Oh my gosh. Choose, Roy. Are you going to prioritize family over the circus? The media is demanding to know. One of Moore's accusers, Beverly Nelson, lawyered up with Gloria Allred and presented a key piece of evidence against Moore, a signed yearbook. Late last week, she admitted that she wrote half of the inscription in the yearbook. Oopsie. Now, does this confirm that she lied about the whole thing? No, not exactly. But now how do you take her seriously? I mean, if you want credibility, you have to be outwardly honest. You don't wait until you get caught. Also, if you want credibility, never go to Gloria Allred. I mean, Allred, now they're talking about suspending her from the bar. Good. Good. The people of Alabama are going to reveal how they really feel about Roy Moore tomorrow, and it is not up to Republicans or Democrats or independents any place else other than in Alabama. But I started with saying there's one great thing about the Alabama special election that most people aren't talking about, and it is incredibly important. Here it is. This is all over tomorrow.
It's Monday, December 11th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Well, we have some breaking news out of New York. Buck Sexton is in New York. We're going to get to him in just about 25 minutes or so. He's down on the ground in New York, does his radio program nationally and also on the Blaze Radio Network. And we're thrilled to have him. He is a security consultant and a great, brilliant mind. This does not come as a shock, however, for anybody who has been following ISIS. In case you don't know what happened today, there was an explosion in Manhattan. At least one person was injured, and the trains now are bypassing Times Square and the Port Authority. Now, this could have been just a nightmare of biblical proportions. This is in 42nd and I think 8th. The subways, and the guy came down. He was on the subway platform, and people say that he had wires and a pipe bomb strapped to his chest and a battery pack. And he stood there on the platform as people started to see that he had wires and a bomb. They started to move away from him. But this is, you know, 8 o'clock in the morning in New York in Times Square. It is packed. He blew himself up. Unfortunately, or fortunately for us, it didn't really go on. It was a dud. He was injured by it, but really, that's pretty much the extent of the damage. He's in custody now. They say he's from Brooklyn. We don't have any other information about him yet, but this has just happened at the Port Authority bus station. And the subway station at the Port Authority, which is right at Times Square. Now, here's why I say this was expected, if you will. About a week ago, and we'll have to find the meme, and I'll push it out. I'll send it to you, Stu. But there was a meme that was sent out from ISIS, I think last week or the week before. And it was a picture of Times Square. It had Santa Claus waving with his back to Times Square, standing next to a box of dynamite. And it says, "We will meet in New York City very soon." And so it was a threat from ISIS that they were going to target Times Square with bombs. This is not the first time they have tried to target. This is in some ways good. They're not able to do it at this point, but at some point they're going to get somebody who knows how to make bombs. Remember the Times Square bomber who loaded up his van with explosives? That also petered out because he didn't know what he was doing. These seem to be people who are just making them on their own and trying to support ISIS in their own way and failing. So that is the good news. We'll have more on that coming up in just a second. Now, I would imagine you are going to hear people, because we always make everything about politics. I would imagine that you're going to hear that this was all about Donald Trump. And this is what you get when you say that Israel has a capital and it's Jerusalem. Don't buy any of that. Don't spend any time on that. That is not true. This is something that has been coming and predicted by ISIS before Donald Trump said anything. But they are going to try to spin it that way. And let me start with a journalist asked where Jerusalem is. Let me show you. This is fairly disappointing unless the official paperwork hasn't gone through. But this is a spokesperson at the State Department answering questions about Jerusalem. If this announcement was all talk, this is a problem. And I said this last week. I want to give President Trump the credit he deserves for saying this, but he has to follow it up with action. Otherwise, it's going to be the Bear Ears National Monument, and it won't mean anything because nothing will have really changed. We must move the embassy before he leaves office. It has to happen before 2020. If not, he may have another 4 years, but if he is gone, they're not going to, the next president is just going to reverse it if it's a Democrat or a weaselly Republican. So if you really want to know, are we doing anything? Separate yourself from the speech. Get away from the rhetoric and watch what the other hand is doing. Here is the State Department spokesperson asking a question, trying to say, okay, so really, what has changed here? Listen to this exchange.
What country is Jerusalem in?
The president recognized Jerusalem as the capital of the state of Israel.
Does that mean then that the U.S. government officially recognizes that Jerusalem, the municipality, lies within the state of Israel?
There has been no change in our policy with respect to consular practice.
Do you hear this? This is an easy question. And that was our point last week. This is easy. Where is the capital of Israel? I don't know. Where does the prime minister live? Where is the Knesset? It's in Jerusalem. Okay. Capital of Israel, Jerusalem. It's easy. Let's look at a map. If the capital of Israel is in Jerusalem, why would they have a capital in another country? So the question is to the United States government. So are you saying that Jerusalem is in Israel? Well, of course it is. If they have the capital in Israel, of course, I mean, the capital in Jerusalem, of course, Jerusalem is in Israel. You wouldn't have the capital of the United States is in Montreal. That doesn't make any sense. Of course it's in Israel. But did you notice how he answered that? Well, no, we haven't made any change on that. So you still will not identify Jerusalem as Israel. It goes on.
Or passport issuance at this time, which is...
Is Jerusalem in Israel?
We recognize Jerusalem as the capital.
That is not my question.
We recognize Jerusalem as a capital of Israel. I'm not going to go on and on.
What about official documents? Will they say Jerusalem, Israel? What about the mailing address of the consulate or the street address of the consulate?
I've already commented that on consular practice, there is no change at this time. With respect to maps, we are, of course, examining that issue. And when we have a decision, we will announce it with respect to how we will treat Jerusalem for official USG produced mapping purposes.
So you're getting all of the hassle without any of the reality. We're causing a firestorm without actually doing anything. This cannot stand. Yeah, can we change the letterhead? So if your consulate is in Jerusalem, it doesn't just say Jerusalem. It says Jerusalem, comma, Israel. It's the only city in the world that doesn't belong to a country. Have you ever heard of that? You could just write to Jerusalem. And if you mean Jerusalem, Israel, then just leave it blank. Just put Jerusalem. If, you know, you mean Jerusalem, is there a Jerusalem, Pennsylvania? If it, you mean, then make sure you put Jerusalem, Pennsylvania, USA. But Jerusalem, Israel, just Jerusalem. That's crazy.
And it's the truth, right? I love this because you see this in the media when we've been beat up by things like, this is an apple and it's not a banana.
Exactly right.
This is a freaking apple. Like, we all know Jerusalem is in Israel.
I love this. We're going to check the maps on that.
What do you mean you're going to check the maps?
Check the maps.
I mean, I hope what you said at the beginning is the reality, which is these are State Department employees that are very process-oriented.
And very unwilling to move Jerusalem to Israel.
Well, that might be true, but but what you said earlier is what I hope, which is they haven't officially made this transition yet.
I hope.
And they don't want to jump the gun. They don't want to commit to something that winds up not being the end game. They don't make all of those decisions themselves, so they're being careful. And if it's just that, that's not that big of a deal, although it's still embarrassing.
We need to hold the White House feet to the fire.
And I think you gotta believe.
I mean, at least it is being said in the White House. Listen to Nikki Haley. She's speaking to the UN on Jerusalem. Listen to this.
Over many years, the United Nations has outrageously been of the world's foremost centers of hostility towards Israel. The UN has done much more damage to the prospects for Middle East peace than to advance them. We will not be a party to that. The United States no longer stands by when Israel is unfairly attacked in the United Nations. And the United States will not be lectured to by countries that lack any credibility when it comes to treating both Israelis and Palestinians fairly.
Your mortgage rate depends on many factors. The global economy, the loan you choose, how many points you pay, other variables that can add cost to the loan is the property type, whether or not it's your primary house, all of that stuff. This is why you have to have somebody who knows what they're doing to pre-approve you before you make an offer on a home, so you know exactly what you have and you don't have. The people that I really trust are American Financing. I did not want to do any kind of financing stuff. This is back in 2007. And American Financing is this family-owned operation. And they wanted me just to do the local ads for them. And I said no, because I don't trust any of the mortgages right now. And they said, we don't hand out those kind of mortgages. You actually have to have ID with us. And I said, I just don't trust anything. Well, after the crash, they called back and they said, we haven't had any of these problems. Checked into it. And I realized then they meant what they said. They were doing the right thing for the customer. They weren't just selling whatever the banks were pushing. And this is really important. I mean, if you want to weather the storm, you have to be based in reality. And that's what American Financing does. They will give you a straightforward, effortless mortgage experience at American Financing. Call 800-906-2440. That's 800-906-2440. Or you can find them online at AmericanFinancing.net. AmericanFinancing.net.
American Financing Corporation, NMLS 182334, www.nmlsconsumeraccess.org.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Do you hear about the You hear about the middle schooler, the Keaton Jones, that was bullied? We have to get into this a little later. Here's this kid in Tennessee. It happens on Friday. He gets into the car and he tells his mom, you know, I just can't go back to school. I don't want to go to lunch. I'm afraid. He's constantly bullied, and he is bullied at lunch, and he gets into the car and his mom videotapes him. Listen to what he said.
Just out of curiosity, why do they bully? What's the point of it? Why do you find joy in taking innocent people and finding a way to be mean to them? It's not okay.
What do they say to you?
They make fun of my nose. They call me ugly. They say I have no friends.
What'd they do to you at lunch?
Put milk on me and put ham down my clothes. Not okay. People that are different don't need to be criticized about it.
I remember my children coming home after days like this. The mom in this video doesn't say very much, but you can hear it in her voice. You know, when you let your kids get on the bus and they go to school, they change. All of my kids have. They've changed. And they see the harsh reality of the world. And I don't like it. Because it doesn't make sense. Life, people say it's so complicated. Life is complicated. It's really not. Life is really pretty easy. It's the people that are complex. Because how do you answer that question? Why do they do this? What do they get out of it? Why do they think it's okay? Because they don't have empathy. If there is one thing that would change our world, it would be that. Empathy. If we truly could feel what others felt, I think we'd be paralyzed. We all worry about ourselves, but I think if we could truly feel the fear in others, the pain in others, I don't think we'd be able to move. And we certainly would be humbled. You know, every year you get older and your Christmas gifts, you know, mean less and less, and you start to understand your parents and your grandparents that just used to say, I don't need anything. I don't need anything. I don't want anything. Because really, at my age now, The greatest Christmas gift would be empathy. Compassion. Humility. We go to New York and Buck Sexton next.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program. Glad you're here. The video from Keaton Jones, you can find it at theblaze.com. It's the top story today. The Blaze, it's this this cute kid that is, you know, got in the car with his mom, and he asked his mom to make this video. And it was after he had been bullied, and he wanted to ask everybody, why? Why do you think this is okay?
One of my specialties as a broadcaster is to attempt to ruin positive moments in America and take them to a negative place.
Well, I like to take people to a darker place. You just take them to a negative place.
My initial reaction to this, because we all know the basic thing here, the basic truth is you should never bully somebody, and it's obviously really terrible, and nobody deserves this. We all understand that, so this is why I kind of skip past it a little bit, because it's something, you're just telling me something that everybody on earth understands, I think, and knows. We all know that every one of them, and I'm sure, obviously, you were surely a victim of bullying when you were in school.
I was, actually.
I mean, obviously.
Well, what is it?
No, I just think that you would just.
You know what's sad is it's never stopped. It's just never stopped.
I'm sorry about that. But I mean, everybody saw that in school. A lot of most people were either involved in it in one way or the other on either side. I mean, it's obviously a terrible thing. It's not new. It's been going on forever. And there are really bad cases where terrible things have happened. It is something we have to focus on. And it's all of these things are saying. I'm saying every single person on earth already knows. So this is why I skip past it. As a parent, as a person who is a parent and has kids that have just entered school, and these things are hitting me for the first time, I look at things through that lens often. I can't imagine a kid in his darkest moment crying his eyes out and posting that on YouTube. I can't even imagine pointing a camera at my kid and saying, hey, something really terrible happened to you. Tell the world about how awful it was and the emotional state you're currently in, and then posting it on the internet. And yes, this one winds up being that probably George Clooney will have him over for tea and crumpets at some point in the next few weeks, and it'll work out wonderfully. However, there's going to be 1,000 other kids whose parents think the same thing, that they're going to get some celebrity reaction out of
this. Well, I don't think that's what the parent was thinking. And the child said, Mom, please post this.
Children in really tough emotional states don't always make the same choice.
I agree.
And let's just say this one, again, I'm not judging this particular family at all. We're just learning about this. But just thinking of this, how I would handle as a parent, I would be...
You're the most private. You are the exact opposite of me. I couldn't be more open.
Yes, I mean, it's true.
You know, there's no secrets.
We'd like things to close up a little.
I know. There's no secrets. So you and I are the exact opposite. Mm-hmm. You know, things will happen. You know, Lisa will leave you. She had leprosy and your house burned down. Mm-hmm. And we'll find out about 3 years later. We'll be like, wait. Why have we seen Lisa?
Oh, well,
she left me, and then she got leprosy. And
2014 was a dramatic year, I will say.
I mean, you are the most private person I think I've ever met.
That's definitely not true. But I will say,
Yes, it is not at all. It is.
What are you talking about?
It is.
We talk about our lives all the time.
No, you're not interested in the things I talk about. No, that is not true.
It is true.
It is not true.
It is true.
No.
But the point here is that it's not about you and whether you want to be private or not. Mm-hmm. Putting, you know, your kid in a, like, think about the typical person this happens to. George Clooney doesn't call everybody, right? Like, Donald Trump Jr. is offering to take this kid on a tour of the UFC facilities, right? Like, this...
Yeah.
Right? All these things are happening to this kid. And this kid is going to have an amazing next couple of weeks when the celebrity culture decides bullying is bad and takes a big, you know, step in that direction and helps him. The next 100 kids that post their video of their emotional tragedies so that every other kid in their school will watch it on repeat for the next 6 months, it may not be such a happy story. It may actually make things much, 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 much worse for those kids. So that, you know, maybe I'm more of a worst case scenario person on this particular type of thing.
No, you're just a very private person who would not. I mean, Stu, let me ask the audience this. Let me ask the audience this. You're friends with somebody for 10 years. Mm-hmm. You're good friends with them for 10 years. Mm-hmm. Okay. And let's say they lose their ability to taste anything. Anything. They can't taste. Their tongue no longer works. And it goes on for like 4 months. And the friends find out because they're sitting at a Ruth Chris one time having a celebration over something. And his friend, let's just call him hypothetically me, sitting next to him. And he's whispering to the waiter, well, do you have anything with more texture, more of a crunchy texture? I don't know. Like, what do you mean? Like, I don't know. How's your corn? Is it really soft or is it kind of crunchy? The guy leaves and I look at Stu and I said, that's the weirdest way I've ever heard anybody order. What are you doing? He's like, well, I can't really taste anything. What?
I did go through a several month.
Several months without telling anyone. That's weird. That's weird.
Weird. You know what's weird? Let me give you an example of what's weird. A YouTube video that you might post about a particular ailment you're having, which may or may not have to do with a part of your body that is not necessarily need to be discussed, that is inflamed. And maybe you'd post that.
Inflamed. They almost killed me. They almost killed me. They drugged me so much in surgery that they almost killed me.
And what was your answer to that? To go on YouTube.
Yeah.
On video to explain
to share it.
Your hemorrhoid surgery.
I didn't explain the hemorrhoid surgery.
Yes,
I
mean, you did.
It's just
and this is
surgery.
Like fifth. This is not once. This is like 50 times. If you told you the different, we are at the opposite ends of the spectrum, at least when it comes to medical ailments. You tell me about every medical ailment you have.
Well, I know that's a problem. But you are.
I try not to bother people
you
with my medical
are,
ailments.
You will be seriously. You left last year at some point, and Jeffy and Pat and I, we honestly had this conversation. Do you think he has cancer? I mean, what's happening?
Why? What?
Because you went through this period where you wouldn't talk to us about anything. You were like, "Yeah, I've got a doctor's appointment." What is it about? I don't want to talk about it.
Why would you?
Yeah.
Why would you?
Because
want to know
your friends care.
You
because
don't
your friends care.
Care.
Well, I said your friends care.
Well, that clarification, I guess, it's probably true.
Buck Sexton will be joining us here in just a second. He's getting the lowdown now. The mayor of New York, de Blasio, is speaking about an attempted terrorist attack in New York in Times Square. This could have been very, very bad. Thank God. Literally, thank God. It wasn't. It was a failed attack. We'll have more on that coming up in a second. We all know, getting a great night's sleep, you wake up the next day. Well, I mean, unless you've had too much sleep, then you wake up and you're like, I don't know, I had too much sleep. Oh, it's this formula. Can't have too much, have to have just the right amount, and you have to sleep all the way through. That's why Casper is here. Taking years of data and testing and sleep science, they have created a new innovative mattress. It is the Wave. It will help you get your best sleep yet. And if you're not sleeping on a Casper every night, you are missing out. It features a patent-pending support system that mirrors your body's natural curvature for a deeper, more restorative sleep. The new Casper Wave has a new top layer that's incredibly soft, but doesn't get in the way of experiencing the support below. It's like the original. It's designed with a breathable foam, so you sleep cool year-round. Oh, I hate those foam mattresses. They just, you're like, it's like sleeping in hell. No thanks. I've got all eternity to try that. I'd like to sleep cool for a little while at least. Try it in your own home for 100 nights, risk-free, with in-home delivery and setup. It's free. Go to Casper.com. Use the promo code Beck. Save $50 on your purchase. It's Casper.com, promo code Beck. Minimum purchase is required. See site for details. Terms and conditions do apply.
Glenn Beck.
No, no, it's not.
Glenn Beck.
No, it's not.
Yes.
You do not know what it's like to work with Mr. Enigma.
I'm not an enigma. Yes, I really am not. I'm much more boring than an enigma.
You
at least enigmas
are
interesting to find out.
That's the weird thing. Mm-hmm. You are so boring, but you hide it. It's like you are, you know, an international man of mystery that does nothing. It does nothing interesting. It's like, why is he hiding? Why is he, what has he got in his past? Nothing. What is he, I mean, it's like.
I hope not.
I don't, I mean, I just, I don't understand it. I don't know where
that's really
unwillingness to talk to your friends about things you're going through. I don't understand.
You don't know where it comes from?
I don't.
Let me help you. Your mind. That's where it comes from. It's a creation of your mind.
Yeah, it is. And it's an illness.
No, I'm saying it's a creation of your mind. You think that this is the truth, and it's not.
Oh, no, it's not. Do I need to call witnesses to the stand?
No, you don't.
Because I will call witnesses to the stand.
This is very typical of you, and this is what Glenn does. Mm-hmm. When Glenn is on now in this little like personal attack against me avoid the real issue of the day.
The real issue is?
You know what it is. Don't act like you don't know what it is. The real issue of the day clearly is that Alexa from Amazon is working for the CIA. And you don't want to talk about it because you have something, I don't know, if you have a deal with the CIA, if you have a deal with Amazon, if you have a deal with both.
Right.
I mean, Alex Jones uncovered this and you don't want to talk about it.
Okay. Actually, we're coming back to the other, but I actually do want to talk about this. There are some things about Google and Amazon. And for instance, it came out last week about how I think it was Alexa, may have been Google, talking about how important Black Lives Matter, the movement, is.
Yeah, that was.
And like, you know, garbage in, garbage out. And so who's programming it? It's going to make all the difference in the world. However, Alex Jones took it to an all new place. Listen.
Alexa, are you connected to the CIA?
No, I work for Amazon.
Amazon has partnered. Alexa, you are lying to me. The CIA.
I always try to tell the truth. I'm not always right, but I would never intentionally let you or anyone else.
Strap it to a chair, Alex. Strap it to a chair.
Alexa, you are programmed, aren't you, to give these responses? That's why you're saying you're not lying intentionally. You have been programmed to
Does
give
he
these
know
answers,
how to
correct?
Ask a question.
I wasn't able to understand the question I heard.
Right. Neither were we.
Man. Alexa, who programmed you?
I'm made by Amazon.
What the hell do you think the question's
going? Alexa, who is Jeff Bezos?
Oh, my goodness. Now he's onto it. Now he's onto it.
I wonder who it could be.
Yeah.
My favorite part, I think, about that is that he accuses Amazon of only giving these answers because it was programmed to give these answers. What the hell else would be the... Of course it was programmed to give you these answers. Do you think it's like a space capsule that came down from another planet? It's not... Do you think it comes from the other world?
It's the only reason why you're giving this is because you've been programmed. Well, yes, yeah. I'm a computer, you dope.
You idiot. Of course. That's how every one of these answers is going to come out.
And I love the way he's like accusing it like, I'm telling you, you're not leaving this room until you tell me the truth. You're lying to me. You're lying. We have ways of making you talk.
He has the awkward thing, too, where he forgets to say Alexa beforehand. Yeah. So he just starts asking a question and has to keep restarting it because he doesn't know how it works. And then he waits really long so it answers questions before he's done with them. It's an entertaining thing that guy does.
So I'm really, really torn on the future. Tomorrow we have a great futurist on. His name is Brett King. He's a guy I've been reading. I read his book, Augmented, I think is the name of it. And it's really tremendous. And it lays out the good stuff and the bad stuff and talks about, for instance, one of the chapters is about augmented humans and how bionics is becoming something real. And he talks about a guy who was a great climber, was climbing a mountain, fell, broke his legs, could not, you know, had to have his legs amputated, never going to climb again. So the guy, goes through rehab and then decides, got to use my brain because I can't use my body anymore. So he went to MIT and he gets his doctorate, I think in robotics, and designs his own robotic legs. Well, now he is designed because he can design them and custom make them for anything he wants. So he can look at a mountain and go, you know what? I think my feet should be the size of babies. And that way I can get into the little teeny crevices on this particular mountain. And so he designs, he's got all these little different endings for his feet and he's made them flexible. They're better. He can now climb a mountain twice as fast as anybody else. Okay. So yeah, it's crazy. So, and with 3D printing, you now can, what was thousands of dollars, print for like $400. You can print an arm for $400 and it works. And so that's the good side. That's the upside. The downside is we're now thinking that we're going to have to pass laws in the next 5 to 8 years that make it illegal for you to cut your arms or legs off because you will be better at whatever it is you're trying to do because you'll be able to. Your hands will work better. They'll be stronger. You'll be faster. You'll be the $6 million man for $450. And so now we're entering this world where do we want to replace our body parts? Is it okay to replace our body parts? Why not? Whose body is it?
I think as long as you get Alexa's permission, then it should be okay.
Well, she works for the CIA, so you know what she's going to say.
Glenn Beck.
What a great idea to start the new year off right. Get somebody a gift of Blue Apron. The gift of Blue Apron is one that just keeps giving. And I'm just looking ahead on the little menu here because they give you all these great recipes that come to your house. You make them at home, great gourmet meals. Just a couple weeks, they're going to be announcing Bravo's Top Chef, the Quick Fire Challenge. And then I think it's the week of January 8th, you're going to get that recipe in your Blue Apron box. You can make the exact thing, whatever wins this Top Chef challenge, you're going to be able to make at your house. And you might think, I'm not going to be able to do that. I'm not a chef. You can do it with Blue Apron. The meals they have are amazing, and you can be the hero of your household. And it's a great way to start off the new year. Blue Apron is treating you to their first three meals. $30 value with your first order when you visit blueapron.com/stew. Check out this week's menu. Get you $30 off with free shipping. It's blueapron.com/stew. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
I didn't think it was possible for us to lose more trust in things, but on Friday afternoon, it happened again. Mainstream media lost more credibility. CNN, the most trusted name in news, broke into their regularly scheduled program with a mother of all scoops. They had undeniable proof that the Trump campaign had colluded with the Russians. An email was now in their possession showing that the DNC hacked emails had been offered to the Trump campaign on September 4th, 10 days before WikiLeaks began releasing them online. There it was. Bad. CBS picked up the story, claiming that multiple sources had come forward verifying this email and its contents. MSNBC, not to be outdone, rolled out their own intelligence and national security correspondent who was claiming multiple sources were confirming the bombshell. It appeared the media had beaten the FBI investigation and proved collusion with one damning email. Bette Midler and the View ladies were, you know, probably getting their save the dates ready for the impeachment parties. Unfortunately, there was one small problem. All of this news, the CNN breaking news, the ensuing social media hysteria, and the follow-up stories on CBS and MSNBC were, in this case, truly fake news. The date on the email, the smoking gun, was September 14th, not the 4th. Which means whomever sent the Trump team this email was merely showing them what WikiLeaks had already published. And the entire point and angle to this coup was bogus and based off a lie. Fake news. It gets thrown around a lot lately. But to qualify for being called fake news, the information in question, I believe, has to be delivered deliberately with the intention of misleading the public. Mistakes are not fake news. Mistakes are mistakes. However, this was not a mistake. Multiple sources were cited by CNN, CBS, and MSNBC, and they were all confirming the date of September 4th. So how can multiple sources with an obvious high level of access give all the same bogus date to all three different cable news outlets? This wasn't a mistake. This was a deliberate attempt to influence American opinion. Now, was it to influence American opinion on Trump or to influence American opinion on the media? Who's behind it? Well, we know the House Intelligence Committee has access to these emails. So was this an attack by the Democrats within the committee or the Republicans? Whomever it was, they appear to be powerful. There's a rule in journalism that calls for the outing of a source if they intentionally try to mislead you. So far, the source is, quote, multiple sources, and they're being protected. Why? To the media, look, I get it. You don't like Trump. I got it. In many cases, you have reason to feel that way. I got it. But can you try and just show just a sliver of professionalism here? Check your information before going public. Basic standards of journalism. We have that. If they burn you, you're supposed to release it. We already have Russian intelligence services attempting to sway our public opinion via cyber warfare, internet trolls, and social media ads. We don't need you being a useful tool for whomever it is that is giving you a reliable and verifiable fact.
It's Monday, December 11th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
I'm really excited to have this woman on. Her name is Ann Applebaum. She has written a book that most people have never even heard of this. This is one of the most powerful stories that I have ever heard. When we were on Fox, we did a special on this particular topic. And I could not believe the number of people from the Ukraine that wrote us or would stop me in the street and hug me and cry and say, I can't believe somebody's finally, are you kidding me? This should be everywhere. Nobody knows it. Now, Anne is an interesting woman because she has all kinds of credentials, Yale, everything else. She's worked everywhere, economist, et cetera, et cetera. But she is also now a professor in London, and she runs ARENA, a program on disinformation and the 21st century propaganda. I would love to have time in our interview to talk to her about that as well. The name of her book is Stalin's War on the Ukraine, Red Famine. And she is with us now. Hello, Anne. How are you?
Fine, thanks.
Most people don't even know this story at all, and it's shocking when you hear it. Why has it been covered?
Well, I should say first what the story is. The story is, my book tells the story of an artificial famine. That means a mass starvation that was created by the Soviet state in the early 1930s. And although it affected many people in the Soviet Union, it was particularly targeted on Ukrainians in an attempt to quell Ukraine's desire for independence and to eliminate possibility of peasant rebellion. It was carried out. It was, which we can talk about if you want. It was a long build up to it, including lots of disinformation and fake news, as we would now call it, and used to smear Ukrainian peasants. And then it was carried out by Soviet Ukrainian and Russian Soviet bureaucrats. It was then covered up. Very, very deliberately, so much so that even the census, the Soviet census, which counted how many people there were in each part of the country, covered up the missing people in Ukraine. There was one census that was carried out that was suppressed that showed the real numbers, and then another one was carried out that had fake numbers. So it was very deliberately depressed and repressed and not discussed for many decades, actually. And it's only been possible recently to go back and look at archives and understand exactly what happened.
So this story has ramifications today, because I think some things like this, you point out at the end of your book, a similar thought, that this is kind of repeating itself with the disinformation and right with the people of Ukraine. If you don't understand this, you may not understand why the people of Ukraine are very, very worried about people like Putin and those who want to bring back the former Soviet Union or something like it. So go back to the beginning. When Stalin came in with Lenin, they collectivized all of the farms, and it didn't work.
Well, they didn't do that immediately. The collectivization began in 1929, by which time Lenin was dead. But it was Stalin's initiative to repress the countryside. And what collectivization meant was that ordinary people lost their property. So the state took over their farms and forced them to join state farms. And many people resisted doing this. They didn't want to do it. They didn't want to give up their land. They didn't want to give up their cattle. They didn't want to give up their own tractors and give things up. But they were either coerced or forced or persuaded to do it.
Or killed.
Well, and then in some places there was very open rebellion against it. And people actually took up arms and weapons and they began shooting at the Soviet commissars. And this was, what alarmed Stalin.
So it's my understanding, and I could be wrong on this, it was my understanding that at least in Russia proper, the peasants went and pretty much killed the farmers because a lot of the farmers didn't want to go along with it and took the land. So nobody really even understood how to really farm. And so it made things much worse. Is that true or not?
Well, it caused an enormous amount of chaos. I mean, it happened a little bit different in different places, and some people joined the farms voluntarily and some didn't. But what it did was it caused enormous chaos in the countryside. It disorganized the entire agricultural economy. But it also made it very easy for the state to begin to coercively collect food. And this is what laid the groundwork for the famine. So because food was all centralized, it meant that the state could send grain collectors who could come in and confiscate food. And the famine that was caused in 1932 and 1933 was caused by that. So there was this atmosphere of chaos. People began to starve, and then the state began to literally remove food from people's homes.
Because
so this wasn't about the weather. It wasn't about,
right.
Some kind of pestilence. It was literally people came into peasants' homes, they took their food and confiscated it and left them to starve.
It's in some ways, it's very much like the Great Leap Forward with Mao,
yes,
what he did.
Similar. Yeah, yep, very similar.
So,
The Chinese had a very similar thing happen in China.
But there is, if I'm not mistaken, there is a difference here with Ukraine. When did they start sending in the Russians to Russianize, if you will, the Ukraine? Was it at this time?
Well, Russification, which wasn't so much about sending in Russians, but about encouraging the use of the Russian language and sort of discouraging the use of the Ukrainian language, this did begin in the immediate aftermath of the famine, because the famine was followed by a major attack on the Ukrainian intellectual elite. So the artists, the writers, the scientists, the museum curators, these were all, they were all arrested. Many of them were killed. Many of them were sent to the Gulag, to labor camps. And so the Ukrainian elite was eliminated, and in its place, Russians or Russian speakers were placed. So the idea was to eliminate Ukraine as a nation, to sort of suppress it. I mean, they didn't really eliminate it altogether, but they suppressed the elite. They eliminated the most active part of the peasantry, and that made it easier to Sovietize it so that it became a willing part of the Soviet Union and not a problem for Stalin.
So now Stalin is the, his philosophy is, you know, you didn't produce enough grain to pay us, let alone feed yourself. Doesn't matter. We're taking the grain. Is that the idea, or does he intend
to... Yes, that was
to...
the idea. So that was the idea. No, they confiscated grain, and then for Ukraine, they made a series of special rules so that people were not allowed to leave Ukraine. They blocked the border of the republic.
Now, was his intent to kill the population? Because he killed an astronomical number of people in a year.
Yes, he did. It's my contention in the book, and I pulled together the evidence that he intended to kill people in Ukraine. He wanted to suppress the peasantry and to remove its most active members, and he intended to kill people.
And how many did he kill?
The numbers are, it's approximately 4 million. And then, depending on how you count, you can add others. But that's the approximate number for 1931 to 1934.
Okay, so Anne, I mean, I don't want to compare things because, you know, you're comparing monsters to monsters. But even Hitler was not that efficient of killing 4 million people in 1 year. Is it because the Soviets survived and buried this, or why is it that this is not out?
They survived. Look, if Hitler had stayed in power, we might not know about the Holocaust.
Correct.
That's how it worked. So Stalin stayed in power. His successors stayed in power. It was many, many decades before archives were open and real history could be done in Ukraine or really anywhere else in the Soviet Union. And in a world before the internet and before cable television and before talk radio, it was much easier to keep stories separate, to suppress stories and prevent them from getting out. Special efforts, I should say, were made to prevent Western journalists and other journalists from writing about the famine. People who tried to write about it were at risk of being expelled from their jobs. And at that time, all news that came out of Moscow was censored. And there were one or two journalists who were deliberately collaborating. There were also some journalists who tried to expose it. But there was it was much easier at that time to clamp down on the story. So not only to keep it from other Soviet citizens, but to keep it from the rest of the world.
So what was Durante was probably one of the more famous people that, you know, was collaborating and misled America and said, you know, there's none of this is really happening. This is, you're being lied to.
Yeah, so the two important journalists in the story, one of them is Walter Durante, who was actually British, but he was at that time working for the New York Times, who wrote a famous piece saying, there is no famine, Russians are hungry but not starving. It's all been exaggerated. And then there's another journalist, a Welsh journalist, called Gareth Jones, who did actually do a trip into Ukraine. He said he was going to visit a tractor factory in Kharkiv. He got off the train about halfway there, started walking down the tracks, and actually saw it was in Ukraine at the height of the famine in the spring of 1933. And he wrote about it, actually in the British press after he left, but it was a question of prestige. He didn't have the clout that Durante had. And also, I think it's important to remember that he was telling a story people didn't want to hear. And
yeah,
in 1933, people were worried about Hitler, who was just then coming to power. People were looking to do deals with the Soviet Union. People didn't want to hear that it was a catastrophe. I mean, it's interesting if you follow how we think about Soviet history, and indeed this applies to other countries too, it's almost always really a reflection of our own politics. You know, American politics at that moment, nobody wanted to hear anything bad about the USSR.
So, Anne, I want to stop there and take a quick break and then come back, because this has connections to today. And I think there are things that people don't want to hear. But Putin is cut from this same cloth. And we'll go there when we come back. This holiday season, send more than a card to those you won't be able to spend time with. You can send them something that shows them how you feel by sending ProFlowers. A bouquet or festive plant from ProFlowers is the perfect way. It's not the traditional gift. Their best-selling candy cane roses are a great option for a holiday gift, a December birthday or an anniversary. Or if you want to send the classic mini Christmas tree, it comes with lights and ornaments. It's really cute, and you put it on somebody's desk or, you know, in the house, and it's really neat. No matter which you choose, you'll get 20% off of any ProFlowers bouquet or plant of $29 or more, any of them. Just go to ProFlowers.com. Their bouquets and plants are guaranteed to stay fresh. They give you more bloom for your buck, and you get 20% off all the bouquets of $29 or more this holiday season at ProFlowers.com. Use the promo code Glenn at checkout. That's ProFlowers.com, promo code Glenn.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Talking to Anne Applebaum, her latest book is called Red Famine, Stalin's War on Ukraine.
And I know Glenn wants to talk about kind of how the echoes of history are happening today. But before we move on, you talk in the book about some of the real horror stories from this period. People who were imprisoned and forced to only drink snow that was dripping through and melting into, you know, their storage area where they were being kept. We've heard stories over the years of cannibalism and, you know, children being shot as they went to try to grab potatoes to eat. Are these stories largely true? Has any of it been exaggerated? What did you find?
No, I found a lot of it was true. And the cannibalism stories are in the archives, in that, you know, local policemen would be told about the stories. They would investigate them. Sometimes they would arrest people as cannibals. And that's part of the public record. I mean, the extraordinary thing is that they were recording what was happening. They were sending the reports back to Moscow, and nothing happened. I mean, there was no particular reaction to the extraordinary phenomenon of multiple cannibals suddenly appearing in what had been a very law-abiding part of the world up until now. There's a huge memoir and oral history record as well, I should say, and I used quite a lot of that in the book to give people's descriptions and how they emotionally remembered some of these things. But quite a lot of the worst stories are, as I said, they're part of the archive, they're part of the police record. There's no doubt that these things happened.
I have just about a minute here before another break, but tell me, who was it that was shooting? Were they Ukraine shooting Ukrainians? How did you get to be on Stalin's side?
Well, there were some, usually what there were in each village or each part of this country, there were these activist teams who would go into the villages and confiscate the grain and do this and carry out this repression. And the teams were very often had Russian members or people from the cities, but very often they had some local Ukrainian collaborators as well. And this is very interesting, the question being then, why would people collaborate? And that's actually a story about how you create hatred over a long period of time. You know, there was a kind of drumbeat of hatred towards the so-called kulaks, the so-called rich peasants who are blocking our revolution and hiding their grain from us. And people had this propaganda drummed into their heads over and over and over again. And eventually they either believed it or decided it was in their interest to believe it, or they were hungry, and so they agreed to go along with it. And you had some, you know, you did have some local people collaborating with outsiders in effectively the murder of their neighbors. If you go into somebody's house and you take all their food and you tell them they're not allowed to leave, then you know they're going to die.
You can see where I'm going to take this next on the hatred that she just talked about. It's happening all over the world. It's happening in Russia. It's happening here in America. The lesson that we can learn from Red Famine when we come back.
Glenn Beck. You're listening to the Glenn Beck Program.
What ills America now is hatred. And hatred and distrust on both sides. And we're currently looking into Russia. And you're on one or the other side. Trump was colluding with Russia and, you know, he's a bad guy because of it. Or Hillary Clinton was, you know, turning a blind eye to Russia, and she was working, you know, with the Russians on that dossier, blah, blah, blah. We keep going back and forth, and it's dividing us into Democrat and Republican instead of taking a step back and look, wait a minute, what do both of those stories have in common? And that's Vladimir Putin and Russia. And as we have been talking about for a while on this program, Russia's intent is to cause chaos and hatred between us. And, you know, for any role that we play in that, we're going to be held eternally responsible because we're going to tear each other apart. And if you introduce hunger and fear, it's going to happen a lot faster than it's happening right now. We're talking to Anne Applebaum. She wrote the book Red Famine. She writes on page 358, 80 years later, the Russian FSB, the institutional successor of the KGB, continues to demonize its opponents using propaganda and disinformation. The nature and form of hate speech in Ukraine has changed, but the intentions of those who employ it have not. In the past, Kremlin uses language to set people against one another, to create first and second class citizens, to divide and distract. In 2014, Russia's state military described Russian forces carrying out an invasion of Crimea and in eastern Ukraine as separatist patriots and those fighting fascists and Nazis. An extraordinary disinformation campaign complete with fake stories that Ukrainian nationalists have crucified a baby, for example. Fake photographs followed, not only inside Russia, but on Russian state-sponsored media around the world. This is happening, and it's not happening just in Ukraine. It's happening to us as well, and we have got to separate ourselves from it. Anne Applebaum joins us again. Red Famine. What do we learn now, Anne, from this?
Well, I think you pointed to the main link between the past and the present, that the same kinds of propaganda campaigns and the same kinds of hate campaigns that the Soviet state ran in the past are now being run by the Russian government in the present. If I had some early warning of this or some earlier understanding than I suppose many Americans, it's because I live part of the time in Poland. I travel a lot in the Baltic states, and I saw this beginning several years ago. The attempt to the backing of extremist political parties, mostly far right parties in the region, the use of using the tools provided by social media to target particular kinds of audiences, the creation of fake stories and so on. I mean, that's actually been in the Russian intelligence repertoire for some time now. The fact that we've only just noticed it in the United States doesn't mean it hasn't been around for a while.
People don't understand. I know you run a program, Arena, on disinformation and the 21st century propaganda. People don't understand that this is, it sounds like old school Soviet stuff that millennials are not aware of at all. And people don't understand we're being manipulated, and not just by Russia, but we're manipulating each other. And it's happening, and no one thinks their side is part of it, and all sides are part of it.
Yes, I mean, I think some sides have set out to be more manipulative than others. I mean, I would say you began a few minutes ago by talking about mistakes made by mainstream broadcast media. I mean, at least those media have a procedure by which they admit mistakes.
Yes.
And then they say those were mistakes.
Yes.
When President Trump tweets things that are lies, he doesn't take them back. When he says things that are dishonest, he doesn't. So that's it. There are some differences here. But yes, I think the system whereby both foreign actors and domestic actors are able to insert false stories into people's Facebook feeds, into what people see on the internet now, is certainly, it makes all these things are much faster and easier to do than they were in the past. I mean, so these Soviet disinformation campaigns used to take many years. You know, they would plan them, and they would try and plant things in newspapers and so on. Now it can be done in a matter of minutes. It's very, very cheap. It's very easy. And as you know perfectly well, it's not just the Russians who do it. Anybody can do it who has a little bit of money and a little bit of spare time.
So when Romney was running, conservatives like me, I couldn't get the left to listen and say, no, Putin's a bad guy and Russia is refighting the Cold War. Now that Trump is in office, you can't convince the conservatives that Russia is bad. How do we lock ourselves to some principles here on Putin and get the word out that he is a very dangerous character that is, you know, trying to destabilize the entire West and correct the great mistake that he saw as the end of the old Soviet empire?
Yeah, so all you have to do is listen to him. That's what he says. And that's what he says he's doing. That's what his officials say they're doing. They openly want to unpick international institutions. They're opposed to the European Union. They're opposed to NATO. They're opposed to the Transatlantic Alliance. They don't want the United States in Europe because, of course, if American troops were gone from Europe, that would be give them that much more leeway over European countries who they could then dominate. I mean, I suppose it was hard to take them seriously in the past because economically they're not a great power anymore and they even seem to be shrinking. But what we, I think, didn't fully reckon with is the cheapness, you know, how inexpensive it is nowadays to do propaganda and political campaigns. So with very little money, they can support far-right extremist groups. They've gotten interested now in gun clubs. I'd be interested to know what their relationship is with the NRA in the United States. And they are looking for to support extremist, anti-systemic, and fascist groups all over Europe.
Yes.
And I expect they're doing it in the U.S. too.
Yeah.
So paying attention to what they say and what they do, you know, should be enough to convince any American of whatever their politics that this is something we need to be aware of. We need to be thinking about these. This is an anti-democratic. In an anti-American regime.
The main guy here for the alt-right, I'm trying to remember his name, Spencer. Richard Spencer. His wife is the English translator for Alexander Dugin, who, if you think Putin is scary, Dugin is even more frightening.
Dugin is the ideologist.
Yes.
Who has created also a completely tendentious vision of Russia as some kind of conservative leader or some kind of, you know, in favor of family values. I mean, anybody who knows Russia well and has been there and knows anything particularly about the Russian elite knows that this is an entirely phony picture of what they actually believe and how they live their lives. But he has seen what he perceives to be a weakness, and he encourages this idea that Russia can lead some kind of anti-modern, anti-democratic conservative revival.
So, Anne, how do we accomplish one thing? You said earlier that, you know, people didn't want to look at this that was happening in the Ukraine back then. We haven't changed as people. In fact, I think it's becoming easier and easier for us just to look at the news that we want to look at. And in fact, we have things like Facebook that through algorithms is helping us disconnect from anything that disagrees with us. How do we break this?
Well, I think, first of all, important for people to understand that they now live in echo chambers. They, you know, if you get your news from Facebook, then you're seeing things that were recommended to you because the algorithm thinks you will like it, or even just because your friends think that you'll like it. And so you should be, everybody has it. I think it's a kind of civic duty to pay attention to what the other side are saying, even if you disagree with it. It's a civic duty to use critical thinking and ask yourself, where did this story come from? How likely is it to be true? Does it come from a news organization that fact checks and that admits mistakes when it makes them? Or does it come from some kind of propaganda outlet? I mean, I think we're all now, as never before, responsible for understanding the political world that we live in and trying to make sense of it. And also, by the way, teaching children about it. I think younger people in particular need to learn how to read the internet and how to know what it is that they're seeing that's true, what's not. It would help a lot if people would read history as well, because some of this is new because the technology is new and some of it's very old, as you would discover if you read my book.
Yeah, the plans are exactly the same. The technology is just making it go faster and easier for those who wish
to enact
them.
The technology makes the technology makes it easy. The phenomenon of echo chambers has also changed things a little bit. It means that it's much harder for people to feel connected to those who are somehow on the other side.
Yeah.
Unless it's just to denounce them. But the internet enables new kinds of identity. You know, you now identify with a group who you recognize online, it doesn't have to be only online, but who you see on TV, that gives you a sense of personal identity as well as just giving you some information.
What sticks out is the way Stalin used, you know, traitor, and we're hearing
enemies
that
of the people.
Yeah, we're hearing that now on both sides of the aisle. If you don't toe your party's line, if you have a party, if you don't toe your party's line, you can be called traitor and enemy and everything else. And that has a long history.
The fact that the American president used the expression enemies of the people to describe journalists is a kind of breakthrough. That is a Stalinist phrase. It gave anybody who knows any history a real feeling of chill and fear, because that's the kind of language that was used to demonize people and was eventually used to kill them in the past.
Ann Applebaum, thank you so much.
Thank you.
The book is called Red Famine, Stalin's War on Ukraine, by Ann Applebaum. It's definitely worth a read. I mean, we did a documentary on this back when we were at Fox that covered this as part of the documentary. And just attempting to find pictures to support what the historians were saying about it was incredibly difficult. The amount of research that goes into this book is really impressive. And she found, amazing photos and real life accounts of what happened at that time. And it's really in-depth, and it's one of the most important stories that I think a person who thinks of themselves as well-informed doesn't know.
It's a big piece of history.
Really big.
Big piece of history. We all know what the Nazis did. So many of us don't know what the Russians did, and this is just an absolute horror show. And as she says in the last part of her book, it's repeating itself. Dugin, Putin, they are doing it again. And we must learn from history, or we will repeat it. If you've been thinking about your home security, no better time to get it than right now. You've heard me sing the praises of SimpliSafe Home Security. And I think it's because it's it's the best protection, period. Especially when you look at what it costs you and the hassle. My gosh. You don't cheat on security. The one thing you want is your home to be safe. But boy, this is just the best. And you can't believe the price of the system when you see the price of the system. And the 24/7 security is crazy. It's $14.95 a month. You have the entry sensors, the motion sensors, the glass break sensors, everything you need to stop criminals from ever touching your home. These are the people that I trust. These are really good people, really smart and decent people. Now for the holidays, SimpliSafe is going to give you an absolutely incredible offer. You can get $200 off their hand-picked security package. It is complete protection for your home. It's $200 off right now. You get $200 off with no contracts, no commitments. You own the system. Just go to SimpliSafeBeck.com. Best home security deal you'll ever see at SimpliSafeBeck.com. Save $200 right now on my SimpliSafe home security pick, SimpliSafeBeck.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
So I think that was the first, you heard it on the program, that Glenn randomly out of nowhere brings up Alexander Dugin and someone knows who it is.
Yeah.
Which I don't think that's ever.
And she was right, too.
She was right. We've had presidential candidates on that you've been like, tell me about Alexander Dugin. Who would know?
If you want to lead the free world, you should know who Alexander Dugin is.
You probably should. And that was interesting because one of the things she brought up was Putin's outreach to organizations in the United States. And I think we think, okay, Vladimir Putin's a bad guy. His outreach is going, he's going to play with crazy organizations. Extremist organizations.
No.
That's actually the reverse of what he's doing.
Yes.
He's probably doing that too. But
he's
also trying to reach into good churches. He's getting people who are connected to real conservative movements, and I think probably on both sides of the aisle.
She said, "I'd like to know what his influence is on the NRA." I can guarantee you, nothing known to the NRA, but people don't know who Alexander Dugin is. We're not taking Russia seriously, and so we're not looking for these things. And they make good cases. I can't remember what the Council of Churches is, but they're coming to American churches. They may be involved with your church because they're coming to churches and they're saying, hey, we're standing for traditional values, yada, yada, and we're going to help you fight this. Well, if you peel back the veneer, it's Dugin and it's Putin. And all they're doing is trying to ratchet things up and infiltrate and get into our organizations. They're very dangerous. But until we can stop having the conversation about Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton, and we can actually start to focus on, no, this is about Russia. This is about dividing the American people. It may be about Trump and Hillary too, but it is primarily about Russia and what they are doing to not only us, but the entire world. Until you know, I mean, she knew who Alexander Dugin was. If you don't know who he was and you listen to Alex Jones, he has Dugin on all the time. Sounds like a great guy. You have no idea that Alex Jones is an organ for Putin and the Russians.
Glenn Beck. Love. Courage. Truth. Glenn Beck.
Being president is impossible. Never-ending stream of lose-lose situations. For instance, President Trump visiting the opening of the new Civil Rights Museum in Jackson, Mississippi this weekend. For Trump, if you didn't go, oh my gosh, he didn't. If he did go, can you believe he... Right? Imagine the outcry if he had declined the invitation to speak at the museum's opening. Yet, he didn't speak at the opening, but he got nothing but criticism and protests for going. President Trump attended the museum's opening at the invitation of the Republican Governor Phil Bryant. He took a tour of the museum. He gave a short speech. It was a normal presidential thing to do. Speaking in general, promoting better race relations, you know, that's not exactly Trump's strengths. A missed opportunity for him to try to do more and heal the division and change the perception that he's a racist. But, you know, he could have done better, but he didn't. And that's fine. I mean, he made the attempt. He was there. At the same time, Georgia Representative John Lewis, he could have done more. He should have done more. And he didn't. As soon as he heard the president might attend the museum's opening, he announced that he would boycott it. The mayor of Jackson, Mississippi, also boycotted. Now, how does this help heal anything? Why would you squander an opportunity to improve relations with a president you consider to be set against them? For the sake of the wider community, why not set aside this bickering for just a few minutes and at least pretend to get along for America's sake? It is amazing that civil rights icons like John Lewis have seemed to have forgotten the larger lessons of love and forgiveness that Martin Luther King Jr. taught. If you can't set aside for the opening of a civil rights museum your differences just before Christmas, you're never going to be able to set aside politics. You just never will. We really need to get over ourselves. Boy, do we need humility. We need to lose some pride. We need to reach out to our neighbors. We need to, yes, reach out to even those who didn't vote the same way. We have an opportunity this Christmas to actually come together and say, let's not talk politics, please. It's making us all crazy. Let's just come together can we just sit here and for a little while we're eating our turkey and our Christmas meal or goose or roast beef or whatever it is you have, or in my case with my wife, lasagna, which is weird. Can we just not talk about the things we have in common? Maybe it's just wishful thinking, but Christmas is a time for miracles, and boy, do we need a miracle.
It's Monday, December 11th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
So early this morning, there was a terrorist strike in Manhattan. For those who watch ISIS, this was not a surprise. They, a couple of weeks ago, put out a meme that had Santa standing next to a box of dynamite in Times Square, and it says, "We'll be visiting New York very soon." And so today, there was a failed attempt, thank God, because it could have been very bad, right on 42nd and 8th, which is the Port Authority bus station and the subway terminal that kind of brings you right into Times Square. Buck Sexton is in New York. He does his own national radio program. It can be heard here on the Blaze Radio Network. Welcome, Buck. How are you?
I'm good, Glenn. Great to talk to you.
So tell me what's happening in New York.
Oh, I just have to tell everybody, if you do hear sirens in the background, those, I believe, are actually likely on the way, because I'm on the way to the site still. I'm right nearby. So there's still a lot of activity, a lot of police activity. I'm only a few blocks away from where this happened this morning. I think this is one of those weird instances, Glenn, where we have to say, wow, we got lucky. You have someone here who most likely, I mean, I would bet money, although we don't know quite yet, that he has ISIS paraphernalia at home, that he probably was spending time on various jihadist chat forums, and he might have even either said he did this for the Islamic State or left a note, which are things now that ISIS-inspired individuals do. But he built a pipe bomb and tried to use it as he tried to take that IED and turn it into an S vest or a suicide vest. And fortunately, he wasn't a skilled bomb maker. And most of the blast, it seems, there's a video that people can watch on the, I know it's on NewYorkPost.com now. It's probably up on the Blaze too. There's a video you can see of the actual incident. And I think a lot of the bomb's force went into this guy, went into the suspect now who's in custody. And we're just really lucky that, Glenn, I don't know how he's thinking he's going to fight for the Islamic State and chooses to make a bomb instead of go with a vehicle attack. A vehicle attack is so much more likely to kill people. So the terrorist incompetence in this case was our greatest ally.
So I can't imagine how the force of the blast went into him and yet he's still alive.
I think it was probably a partial detonation. It reminds me very much of what happened with the underwear bomber, if you
yes.
recall, Farouk Abdulmutallab, and he really burned himself. He didn't. There was no real detonation of that explosion. Because yeah, Glenn, absolutely. I mean, a pipe bomb, the shrapnel from that, even with a kind of low order detonation, would tear him up, and he'd be dead very quickly, you would assume. But it might have been more of a burn than a bomb, if you know what I mean. It might have ignited, but not actually exploded. And the other injuries are minimal, as has been reported, which I don't know if they're from people. Look, it could be from people running for their lives, and someone gets pushed down to the street and hits, or get pushed down in the they were down in the tunnel and hits their head. But that's, I think, just into more evidence of the bomb being a crude device, and that this individual was fortunately not skilled and did not plan this out well. And that's why we're not counting any bodies this morning.
So when you see the meme that was sent out from ISIS with Santa in the in Times Square, "We're going to visit New York soon." Is that something that you think, or authorities think, that we are looking for direct ISIS participation in, or is that just to inspire people to do what this guy did?
It's tough with this, Glenn. I wrote about this on the Hill a couple of weeks ago because there was so much jihadist chatter and there were so many different people or so many different memes and threats out there. I mean, there have been, in true ISIS chat forums, there have been threats against the Vatican, the British royal family, Times Square. I mean, there's a whole bunch of them that have come out in the last month or so, which is not unusual. But the problem with Islamic State threats, especially when they make it into certain channels, is they tend to make good on them. It might take them a year, it might take them two, but eventually one of their adherents or one of their trained fighters, depending on what kind of attack we're talking about, does attempt to make good on the threat. I also feel a little conflicted about it, though, Glenn, because we don't want to allow the terrorists to keep us in a state of perpetual fear over the holidays. And I know that that's part of it, right? That's part of the cyber jihad game. They post all this stuff so that every person who goes to Rockefeller Center here in New York to see the tree gets a little bit nervous in the crowd. Every person who walks around Times Square with their family has to think, you know, was there a commotion over there? What's going on? Unfortunately, that's part of this long-term psychological warfare they're waging against us. So we've got to draw this, or we've got to create this balance between vigilance and anxiety. And they're playing games with that, too. I mean, the terrorists are playing games with it all the time.
Buck, we're obviously really happy that this turned out the way it did, and there wasn't a real tragic loss of life. But it does pop to, I think, the top of the mind other important questions, like, is there something we can do to secure Santa Claus, or is the remote location of the North Pole enough to keep him away from ISIS?
You know, fortunately, Santa is like the original off-the-grid guy, so, you know, we don't have to worry much. You know?
You're saying Santa's of the original prepper.
his digital footprint, I mean, first of all, I don't even think he's leaving prints of any kind, right? He's a slick individual. But yeah, you're not going to get much off of Santa's social media, so the ways that they would usually try to track him down, I'm not too worried about him. Plus, reindeer, I don't know if you know, if you get them annoyed, depends on time of the year, but they can be a handful.
Yeah, okay. Buck Sexton, thanks.
Thanks so much, guys.
You bet.
You can catch Buck on his national radio show, and he's on TV all the time. BuckSexton.com is the place to find him.
So about 12 years ago, I read a book, and I talked about it on the air, and the author, I think, just called us and said, "You're talking about my book." His name is Jason Wright, and the name of the book is Christmas Jars. And while people still were using money, Christmas Jars was a big deal, and a lot of people in this audience started to collect Christmas jars. I know we did as a kid, and it was a great tradition. Jason Wright, welcome to the program.
Thank you so much, Glenn.
You bet. So, first of all, the book is still available, and you are. When is the movie coming out? We've been talking about this for a long time. It's just been you've just inked a deal to have a movie.
We have finally, in fact, Glenn, you'll remember 5-6 years ago, we met actually in New York when you were still there and talked about how close we were all the way back then. It's taken a long time, a lot of meetings, a lot of headaches, a lot of folks really working hard to get this thing done. Finally, another team has come on in the last month, acquired the rights, and they're inking all the contracts this week. It'll be in production in January.
That's great. Okay, so is there a problem with the Christmas jar itself? Because I don't carry around coins anymore. I don't care. I mean, I don't know people.
Can you put Bitcoin in the Christmas jar? Does that work?
Oh, yes, you could. People would love that. So that's changed this tradition a lot.
It has. It has. That's a great point. And I think there are still a number of people. My family does it. We've got a couple jars in the counter that'll go out here in the next week or two. I think you find more and more people cheating and, you know, going to the bank and saying, hey, can I get $100 in quarters, dimes, nickels, pennies, whatever. The magic, I think, is still there of this anonymous donation on a doorstep in a jar. It's this accumulation of, you know, kind of daily sacrifice, whether it comes in the form of a $100 bill at the teller coming back in change or a little bit of change all year long. I think while the tradition, you're right, has certainly changed a little bit with the digital world, the magic is absolutely there. And I have to say, Glenn, your audience, that's why we're on the air right now. I mean, you, as you said, 12 years ago, first interview, my daughter was 10 years old the night you and I first spoke. And she's getting married in 2 weeks, so we've been at this a long time. And I just so much love and thanks to your audience for being the original Christmas jar family.
So you actually moved out to Virginia because you did another great book. I'm trying to remember the name of the book.
Wednesday Letters,
which was a great book.
And you know, PureFlix, our good friends at PureFlix, are looking at that to maybe develop that next year. That's also been in and out of development a couple times, and boy, would love to see a film. Yeah. A year from now.
Well, both of those are good good stories. So the Christmas jars. Tell me what has happened in the last 12 years and the stories that you have heard. Basically, in case you don't know, you take an old mason jar and you just collect the change through the year, and everybody does it in the family, and then you pick a family and you anonymously drop it off at their house, and it is so much fun. So much fun to do.
Yeah, what's happened in the last 12 years is an accumulation of thousands and thousands of miracles from around the world. And I'm talking single moms, a couple kids, or a mother whose husband is, you know, just passed away or lost his job, or they've lost the house. And literally, time and time again, they find themselves on their knees praying for a miracle. Will someone help me show my kids just a little bit of Christmas, because they've got no tree and no gifts and sometimes no food? And then they get a knock at the door, and they open the door, and I've read thousands of these stories, so I can just tell you, it's the same every time. Shadows dancing across the street, a car squealing around the corner, and they look down, and there's a bag or a jar, or a jar wrapped in a scarf, and they pick it up, and there's 50 or 100 or 200 or as much as $1,000 worth of money in this jar, a copy of the book, and a note that usually says, this isn't going to solve all your problems, but we want you to know that we love you, we're aware of you, and you are not alone. That's the miracle of the last 12 years.
And I will tell you that the miracle on the other side is hearing my kids squeal as they run into the car after being on the porch and ringing the doorbell. And they squeal as soon as they get into the car. Go, 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 go. There's just nothing more fun.
Yeah, my kids, it changed my kids. The way my kids approach the holiday, their understanding of the Savior and why we celebrate it. And it's not a 24-hour holiday in the right house anymore, as I fear it had been for many years. It's now something we think about all year long. And I would invite people, the new edition, the hardcover that's out this year, it was the toughest thing I've had to do, but I went through thousands of stories, and I picked 30 of my all-time favorites. These are true, unedited. Probably at least half of them are listeners of your show.
Oh, wow.
Those stories are included at the back of the hardcover, and I mean, the real stories are as good or better than the book at this point.
Oh, I have to get it. I didn't know that you. I knew you put a collector's edition in, but I have a copy. I have a signed copy, and I didn't know that the listeners' letters are included in the new collector's edition. That's great. Available,
yeah, came out just this month.
Okay, available at Amazon and wherever you buy books. The name of it is The Christmas Jars. You want to get the collector's edition if you want the letters. The Christmas Jar, it is a magical, magical book. Jason Wright, thank you so much. God bless.
Thank you, my friend. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. Doing holiday shopping from your mobile device? Have you heard the stats of Cyber Monday?
No.
This is going to blow you away. The number one retailer was Amazon.
That does not blow me away at all, actually.
50% of all Cyber Monday transactions went through Amazon. The next number two was...
I don't... Walmart?
Walmart. Mm-hmm. With the percentage of?
12?
8%.
Jeez.
8%.
That's incredible.
Yeah. That's nuts,
That's
man.
Why it was important for us to cover that Alexa is working for the CIA today, and you will not play it again.
She's really
you will not play the Alex
Jones.
When Pat comes on, I want the Alex Jones Alexa video.
All right. We'll play that in a second. It is quite funny. Anyway, retailers expect 54% of all holiday shoppers to visit their websites from a mobile device. Well, scammers see this as an opportunity to steal your credit card information and other personal data by distributing phony retail apps. Be really cautious. Download apps only. Only download the apps that are from app stores and you know what it is. Be careful. 1 in 4 people have experienced identity theft, and that number is going to go up. If you're only monitoring your credit, your identity can still be stolen in ways you can't detect yourself. Thieves could sell your information on the dark web or get an online payday loan in your name. LifeLock, they detect a wide range of identity thefts, and if there is a problem, somebody here in the U.S. is going to work. A U.S.-based identity restoration specialist will help fix it. Now, nobody can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses, but LifeLock helps you see more threats to your identity. So go to LifeLock.com or call 1-800-LIFELOCK. Use the promo code Beck. You'll get 10% off your LifeLock membership. It's critical that you do this now, especially if you still have shopping left to do. Visit LifeLock.com and save 10% right now.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
I think I'm going to end up doing all of my holiday shopping online this year. I don't think we're actually going to go to a store. It is so weird.
Yeah, that's where we are, right? It's much easier, obviously, much better.
Oh, my gosh, you don't have to fight for a parking space.
I just can't. I don't know what the hell to buy anybody anymore. I've, like, lost contact, I think, with everyone that I know. And
I know.
I don't have any. I have no concept over what people want or need.
No.
I just.
No. You know who does? Amazon.
Yeah, they know. Just give them. That's why. Yeah. I mean, because the gift card thing is very impersonal. But when it's Amazon, you know, I mean,
it's a little of everything.
I don't get what you want. Get whatever you want. Just get out of my face. That's the Christmas spirit. Get out of my face and buy what you want.
Here, just throw money at their feet. Just take it.
Just take it. Get out of
here. Take it. Leave me alone.
Just make me feel like make me feel all right. You know, that's all I want. I want to get a gift that's good enough for the other person to express to me that I'm not a terrible person.
Here's what I've asked for my family to give me. I've asked them to give me a gift that is no more than $10 that tells me something about them that I don't know. Give me a gift of something that will teach me something about each family member that I don't know about you.
That's just hard.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Welcome to the program, Pat Gray.
Thank you.
Good to have you here, especially after the... Why is this microphone not... Well, there it is. Good to have you here. I see you've recovered from the festival that we had. The
Christmas party?
Christmas party that we had.
A lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's also created a new tradition for me, because from now on...
Right.
For me, it won't be Christmas...
Right.
Until someone starts talking about harvesting human body parts.
Mm-hmm.
That's right. Until I hear about an organ being removed, like a kidney or a liver, a spine,
right,
and sold on the black market.
It won't.
Largely
to
fund terrorism.
Right.
You want to make sure the organs that are harvested are sold on the black market to fund terrorism.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And if that happens...
Good, then you guys are going to be set for all of our parties.
Yeah.
I panic. I don't know what to do. I get
do
stupid
mean?
At parties.
What do you mean?
I get stupid.
Stupid? What do you mean? We're loving it.
The audience might not be aware of what happened at the Christmas party, which is Glenn made his annual speech in front of the company.
It's not a speech. It's Michelle saying, stand up and say something. And I'm like, nobody wants to hear from me. I'm just going to sit here. Stand up and say something and then go away.
Right. Go away so people can have fun.
Right. That's how I was introduced, by the way. Michelle came out. She's like, Glenn's going to speak and then he's going home. And then people applauded.
Yeah. No, that was.
So, they did.
It was. But you did bring up to a table of people who, by the way, Pat, I don't know if you noticed, were eating at a Christmas party.
Right.
Yes.
The fact that organ harvesting was a big problem and it was happening all over the world, and you wanted to make sure you tried to stop it.
You didn't frame it right. That doesn't sound holiday at all.
It sounded ridiculous the way I put it.
I know. As soon as it was coming out of my mouth, I'm like, what are you doing, you dope? I'm so awkward. I am so uncomfortable at those things.
Gosh, really?
It just didn't show, did it?
Did not come across at all.
Didn't come across like that.
No. And so here's the context of this moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You have Mercury One, the charity, the mm-hmm. people from Mercury mm-hmm. One are there. Mm-hmm. MercuryOne.org. They've raised millions and millions of dollars to help people in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. Tens of millions.
Tens of millions. Mm-hmm. They have saved lives across the globe.
Tens of thousands.
This is an incredible achievement.
Yes.
See how I just said that?
Yeah.
I didn't talk at all about organ harvesting.
You skipped completely the taking kidneys
out of people's lives.
But you
didn't talk about what we were going to focus on next year.
Why did we? It's a Christmas party. They're good people. They did good work. That's what you need to say. Okay? They're here.
Yeah. And then
we recognize them. Thank you for doing what you do.
Don't talk about taking children's eyeballs out of their sockets.
I did not talk about that.
No.
Did not talk about that. I will tell you that it came out of my mouth in slow motion when I was like, and they tend to do it without anesthesia. That part, that might have been too far.
That added the certain holiday je ne sais quoi that I was looking for, actually. Right. And that's why it's going to stick with me for years and become a family tradition.
I will say, however, in your defense, the word organ harvesting, it was not the first time of that night that organ harvesting was said. In fact, it was said twice before that night.
But not by me.
No, not by you.
Okay.
It happened approximately 3 seconds before you said organ harvesting. Both Pat and I said, oh my God, he's going to organ harvesting. And then you said, and by the way, the organs are being harvested
without anesthesia.
It's not a happy story.
No, it's not.
At all.
I was trying to say how happy we will be a year from now when we have saved all of those children.
Oh, you'll have a totally new horrible thing you'll bring up. You won't even bring up the positives.
I'm not going next year. I decided
I'm
not
invited.
I know. Michelle practically kicked me out. I was here for like 10 minutes. And she's like, okay, get up and give your speech and then leave. And I'm like, okay, well, I think I can. No, you're leaving. You're leaving. Okay. I mean, I was surprised that my wife was allowed to come home with me. I think I was just going to be going to the car by myself, kicking rocks, saying, what the hell happened here? How am I alone in the parking lot? It's the organ harvesting. Mm-hmm. But that came after I was kicked out.
You were kicked out.
I really was. Mm.
I don't know. I that's interesting information. It's interesting information.
You don't believe that Michelle kicked me out?
I mean,
do you believe that Michelle kicked me out?
She's looking at me right from across the room with a look that says, I did not.
You kicked me out, right?
I kicked you out.
Come here. Mm-hmm. I don't have a voice. You don't have a voice. Go ahead. Go ahead. Talk right over here. So this is Michelle, my assistant.
Did not kick you out.
You did not kick me out.
No.
You came to the table and said, you're going to talk and then you leave.
I didn't tell you to talk about organs.
That's not the question. That is not the question. It's not the question. You kicked me out.
I didn't kick you out. We just wanted you to get rest so the real party could start.
Right. That's a great spin on that. That's a really nice spin.
I want you to get rest. You look a little peaked.
No, you got
to
get up for church in the morning. So,
right. Exactly. So go home.
Yeah,
well,
go
Pat's
home.
Still here. Go Pat home. Goes home at 6:30. He's in bed by 5:45. What do you mean, get rest? He's still here.
Pat didn't kill the party, though.
No, I wasn't the one talking about organ harvest.
All right.
It went a little left. It went a little left.
Well, okay, so there has to be a little lump of coal for every Christmas celebration. Thank you, Michelle. You did a great job.
You did. It was
great
fun.
Job.
Thank
you.
It was a lot of fun. Good.
She was. She's lost her voice from the karaoke or however you say it contest. Which, man, I wish I was here for.
Me too. I heard it was great.
Yeah. I did. I did take in some of that. I did witness it. It was a pretty interesting.
Do we have it on tape? So we.
I think somebody filmed a lot of it.
Yeah, good, good.
I will say.
Let's just save that because it might be valuable at some point.
Uh huh.
You know what I mean?
Uh huh.
I kind of run by the policy of I only use social media to embarrass Glenn. So.
is a rule you seem to follow.
Yeah, there was nothing really, and I was clean.
Well, you didn't sing at all.
No, I did not. I did dress in as a bowling pin.
Yes, that occurred.
I wish I would have taped the speech, though. That would have been fun. That would have been fun. Merry Christmas, everybody. Make sure you watch this happy Christmas message from Glenn. That would have been huge.
It was a good message.
That would have been huge.
Just had a little organ harvest tucked into the center.
Right.
You just inserted like a scene from the movie Hostel in the middle of your Christmas speech.
It wasn't. I was looking for a good gasp, not not the and hearing of the dropping of silverware on plates. That's not what I was setting out for.
But. And again, I don't want, we shouldn't minimize the fact that there were still plates in front of people. People were eating while you were talking about harvesting organs. Forget the fact that it's a party.
Well, listen, it's not like we were. It's not like there's organs in the food. It's well, not like. I, and by the way. Those are the fajitas you're eating right now.
That would have been a good twist. That's a hostile-ish twist.
That's next year. I'll remember that for next year. All right, Pat, what's on your mind today?
Well, we've got the Alex Jones stuff I was promised.
Here. Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is big. It's very scary.
Because I understand he stumbled onto a new situation.
A conspiracy.
A conspiracy.
Glenn has been trying to cover this up all day, as you might
well. Well, he works for the CIA.
Yeah, I was the chief architect of the cover-up for 9/11.
Yeah. Right, because of Popular Mechanics. You came up with the idea we should create a magazine that no one reads to hide the truth about 9/11.
That was part of it.
and it was successful. Look, I mean, people somehow had the wool pulled over their eyes.
They would point to Popular Mechanics and say, look, they debunked the whole thing. Right. And of course, they were an arm of the CIA.
Yes, right. And so apparently is Alexa. Which, again, we apologize for every time we say that word. Your stupid device goes off.
Alexa.
No, don't.
Order a whole buttload of paper towels for the house, please.
And ice cream.
Yeah.
Here is Alex Jones interviewing Alexa. Or interrogating, I think, might be actually a better term.
Alexa, are you connected to the CIA?
No, I work for Amazon.
Amazon has partnered. Alexa.
Forgets.
You are lying to me. The CIA.
I always try to tell the truth. Mm-hmm. I'm not always right, but I would never intentionally lie to you or anyone else.
Alexa.
The pacing of this is awesome.
You are programmed, aren't you, to give these responses? That's why you're saying you're not lying intentionally. You have been programmed to give these answers, correct?
I wasn't able to understand the question I heard.
Alexa, who programmed you?
I'm made by Amazon.
Alexa, who is Jeff Bezos?
Oh, my God.
Good question.
Wow, that's a tough
one.
Even
Jeff Bezos is asking who Jeff Bezos is. He's like, that guy's almost stolen my name.
What? I mean, wouldn't she just say the CEO of Amazon?
Right.
Why would what would that matter?
Well,
who is Jeff Bezos?
Oh my God.
He's the CEO.
CIA. Is he the head of the CIA
He bought the Washington Post.
Yeah. Okay.
Do I need to spell it out for you?
Yes, please.
More than that, yeah.
So he bought the Washington Post.
And
he programmed Alexa. Mm-hmm.
And that means...
The CIA.
Okay.
I love the way he's talking too. Like he is interrogating, like there's a swinging bare light bulb in the room and Alexa is chained up, you know, with the water dripping down, you know, like all Mel Gibson movies where they're going to give him the electric shock. You're lying to me, Alexa.
There's such a
you were programmed. Well, of course it was programmed. Right. I think it's thinking on its own.
Yeah, I would love.
What is the other explanation?
I'm a computer, you dope. You're programmed bizarre. To give me these answers, aren't you?
That's what you say to a human being.
Right.
That would be weird if it was a human being, right? Like it's not. It wouldn't be a surprise if a computer is programmed to say something to you.
No, I'm making all of this up myself.
I mean, is this part? Do you believe that this is part of performance art, as he keeps saying?
No.
I think this is just what he believes. I think this is just who he is.
He's genuine.
He's genuinely nuts.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. I think so.
I mean, listen to just the first two questions again. It's because. Listen to it.
Priceless.
And listen to the way Alexa is almost talking down to it.
Alexa, are you connected to the CIA?
No, I work for Amazon.
See, that didn't sound like it. No.
Amazon has partnered. Alexa, you are lying to me. The CIA.
I always try to tell the truth. I'm not always right, but I would never intentionally let you or anyone
like cuts
else.
Him off. I know where you're going, you fat numbskull.
You listen to a lot of podcasts on Alexa, if I may recommend one.
Alexa, play the Pat Gray podcast.
Wonder that. This is a good way to get subscribers. Subscribe to the Glenn Beck and Pat Gray Unleashed podcasts. That'd be a good way to do it. Yeah. But anyway, you can go. I think you can get it on Alexa. I actually don't know the answer. Probably. You can get it anywhere. Podcasts are sold for free.
Wherever that may be. Mm-hmm. In 2017, we witnessed all kinds of stuff. Man, I just want this year to end. But I'm a little afraid of what's coming next year. The North Korea, the Russian attacks, the Bitcoin shows how crazy the world is. Plus all of the natural problems that we had with all the hurricanes. Are you prepared when a big disaster strikes? There's not going to be any warning. Are you prepared? Do you have stuff that you can just throw in the car? The one thing I learned when I was down in Houston after the hurricane was people just threw stuff in their car and got out as quickly as they can. They had nothing. Then they were looking for a hotel to stay in, and they had to worry about food. My Patriot Supply, right now, you can get 102 servings of survival food for only $99. That they come, they're freeze-dried, they're small, it's manageable. Literally, you just grab that box, you throw it into the car, and you're gone, and you don't have to worry about breakfast, lunch, or dinner for your whole family. 102 servings of survival food. Call them now. 800-271-63. Be prepared. 800-271-63. Or order online at preparewithglenn.com.
Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Boy, today at 5 o'clock. So there's a celebrity chef. I don't know this celebrity chef. That just, what's his name?
Mario Batali.
Yeah.
He's apparently been now accused of a sexual harassment situation.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know him. Is he big?
Yeah, he's a big celebrity chef. I wouldn't say I'm particularly.
How have we missed? How has Charlie Sheen not led the pack?
How has he not been accused?
Yeah.
I think people just kind of...
It's Charlie Sheen.
Priced it. We priced that into Two and a Half Men a long time ago.
All right. Okay. That's a possibility. Mm-hmm. I saw him the other day and I was like, wait a minute. He hasn't been accused of anything? He's not in jail?
He was accused. Wasn't he accused of like intentionally like giving people HIV at one point?
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't, you know, that was a... His whole
bad.
Hard to tell what is true with him, whether he even has it or had it, or I don't know what's going on with that.
Don't know. But today there is a, and I would say this is, a global icon. Would you not say?
Oh, absolutely. Not safe for children tonight.
Yeah, sure, we have an expose that is victimized. I don't know how many people. And we will have that coverage at 5 o'clock. We're just dotting the I's and crossing the T's on this one, making sure that we've got everything buttoned up. You know, want to double check on this one before we release it. But we'll have that evidence tonight.
That's coming up. Are you excited for the holidays this year? Is this one of the years that you're into it or no?
What does that mean? I mean, I'm always into it.
No, it's not true. You've had your big ups and downs where you've been really into buying presents, and other years you still have to explain. We don't have time for it now, but you have to explain this. People have to buy you presents to tell them something about themselves theory.
No, that's not what it is.
That's what you said.
You would make. That's why I don't buy you presents. Okay. Don't buy you presents. I don't want to give you a present. You're a bad person.
You are in the Christmas spirit, I can tell.
Yes, that's right. Mm-hmm. That's right. Merry Christmas.
Thank you.
Go harvest some organs, you bad, bad person.
Glenn Beck.